Tuesday, everybody, and welcome to a very, very special edition of Fantasy Baseball Elite Podcast. This is Vlad Sedler, and I'm joined today with my man, partner in crime in DFS, in season-long domination, in possibly Twitter domination as well, Peter Christensen, Draft Chief. How you doing, DC?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We are almost about a third of the way through the regular baseball season, and it's been about a month or so since we've potted, and we obviously are planning to have some occasional powwows here over the next few months. But you know, a lot has happened over the past month. One of the coolest things that has sort of popped up in the industry is these second chance leagues in NFBC, which basically drafted over Memorial Day weekend. As you know, and many know, I have a baby coming in about 6 weeks, and I've got about 14 teams that I do fab for. So I actually sat out this round very, sadly. But I know that you ended up drafting a team in the second chance over the weekend. Is that right?
Yeah, you're more reasonable, more responsible than me. I also have way too many teams, and I knew, you know, my brain was saying, sit this out. You don't need another season-long fantasy baseball team, but my heart went out and I had to jump in there for the second chance. It was fun. It was interesting to see, you know, all the different valuations that people have on players, just a third of a season of data. But the thing about baseball is there's just so much data to look at, obviously, so many stats that, you can see real changes in players. And we saw that reflected in the draft. Interestingly, you know, the first three picks, number one, I believe, off the board was Bellinger or Trout, or Yelich went first. So Yelich first, Bellinger second, Trout third. Trout's been awesome, right? The consensus number one pick in the preseason before the season started, and fell to three here. And honestly, I don't really have a huge problem with it, despite how good he's been. Yelich and Bellinger have just been that crazy. So yeah, really fun draft overall.
Yeah, that's been pretty much the consensus. Actually, the top four has been pretty much a consensus. Some combo of Trout, Bellinger, and Yelich going 1, 2, 3. Mookie Betts popped in as number three overall in some of these drafts. But for the most part, he's been the fourth guy. This Red Sox offense in general has really been underwhelming. The Rays and the Yankees are both ahead of them in the standings. And, you got to figure at some point, and we'll talk about this later on in the show about, targeting players that perhaps we feel are underperforming. It's not just as easy as, hey, this guy got off to a slow start and he's going to be amazing. Or vice versa. There's obviously a lot more to it, but it's just one of those things where it's, just like we wake up every day, you just have to assume that at some point, Mookie Betts is going to turn it around and end up having a really, really hot couple of months here sooner or later.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of players that were drafted high, before the season started that, I think have taken a step backwards that fell in drafts for good reasons, but Mookie Betts isn't one that I'm worried about. I'm with you. I think he'll be just fine. Maybe won't have the insane season that he had last year, but at the end of the day, I think he'll, easily return first or second round value for sure. So he would have been, my pick at four. I ended up with the 10th pick and actually went with a pitcher, Max Scherzer. I took a 10th. I still have him, I was actually going to take Verlander if he fell over Scherzer, but I have no worries about Scherzer going forward. He's just so steady. So took him number one. And then actually Francisco Lindor fell to me at pick 14 or 15, whatever it is. So kind of went with the value there. So Scherzer, Lindor, two guys that I don't really have any shares of from my, preseason drafts. So grabbed a couple of those guys, feel pretty decent about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a pretty solid start. You're getting, Lindor is a 15th overall pick pretty much. You then followed up with Reese Hoskins with some power in the third, then came around the turn with Michael Brantley, an actual kind of an MVP candidate this year. He's actually the offensive player I have the most shares of this year, finally kind of getting valued for what he's doing. And then you take another shot on our boy, Trevor Bauer, there in the fifth round. You basically went Bauer and Marcell Ozuna, a big power bat on the fifth, sixth kind of turn there. So I guess I'm really curious, you know, obviously Bauer is on a very important main event team for me. Both you and I pretty much had him pegged for the best pitcher in baseball this year. And I know you've been watching him really intently. So, you know, what's been going on with all these walks, giving up runs like it's nobody's business? Like, is he kind of the pitcher version of Joey Votto here and just in his own head?
I think maybe, yeah. Like, I didn't really want to take Bauer in this draft, but I don't know. In the fifth round, the end of the fifth round, it was just too far for me. He had fallen too far. He's been not great. Like, he seems to be getting just kind of worse and worse. But he's clearly totally fine physically, right? Like, all the same stuff is there that we loved going into the season. The Indians let him throw like 120 pitches every start, so he's obviously feeling totally fine. The velocity is all there. But it's not just that he's been unlucky, right? Like, you know, I've got a pitcher model that has all the advanced stats inputs and kind of spits out who it thinks is the best pitchers, and it doesn't like Trevor Bauer. Like, he hasn't pitched very well. I just kind of have faith that he will turn it around. I just think he's too talented. I think the stuff is too good for him not to kind of figure it out. And, you know, I think it's, you know, maybe it's a pitch sequencing thing. Maybe he's tipping his pitches. The command hasn't been great, but I do have faith that Bauer will be better going forward.
Yeah. I mean, kind of the more I look at this team, and I really, really like what you did here. You pretty much avoided starting pitchers. Like, you grabbed Scherzer and Bauer early within your first five picks. And then you didn't take another one until 17. And I've seen this before from you when you and I have drafted together, and you just hit hard on your next 3-6, Kyle Gibson, Eduardo Rodriguez, Chris Bassett, Marcus Strome. You got John Gray in the 22nd, Josh James in the 23rd or 25th, actually, looking like maybe you're thinking that he might be able to grab a rotation spot there.
Yeah. I really love Kyle Gibson. I've been high on him all year long. He's been excellent. I think he's going to have an awesome season, especially playing in front of the Twins offense, and their defense is really good too. I could see him winning 20 games easily. Eduardo Rodriguez, I've got him pegged as basically the most unlucky pitcher in baseball so far. I'm not a huge Eduardo Rodriguez guy, but another team that plays for a really good team and obviously has some talent. Bassett, breakout kind of pitcher this year. Bassett and Stroman, you know, just kind of just filling in the staff, not the most exciting picks. John Gray at round 25 is just – he's just too talented for me to pass on him at that point. And then Josh James, as you mentioned, not in a rotation yet for the Astros, but just an electric arm. He was awesome in his, you know, month for the Astros last year. And I kind of think it's just a matter of time for Josh James. My thought is they're just kind of keeping him in that relief role for these first couple of months to just hold his innings down, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think they'll unleash him in the second half of the year, and hopefully I can hold on to him until that happens.
Yeah, and I mean, Josh James throws really, really hard. I mean, what we saw last year was unbelievable. Throwing lots of games with really big strikeout totals, hits near 100 miles per hour. Had a little bit of a tough start to start the year. Was getting hit up a little bit. He wasn't at full strength. He was a little injured as well. I don't know if Corbin Martin is long for the rotation. I know both you and I avoided bidding on him too hard in fab leagues and already see him sort of unraveling. But real quick, before we jump into other topics, I just wanted to touch on a couple of hitters again that you took near the top. A great value, by the way, with Aaron Judge in the seventh round, really adding to some of this power on your team. And then Paul DeJong in the eighth. So this guy's interesting because if this draft was taking place maybe 3 weeks ago, Paul DeJong probably would have been a third, fourth round player. And what happened was, you know, obviously he hit like 350 with like, you know, a bunch of homers and was near the league lead in runs scored in April. And then in May has really sort of dropped down a little bit. He hit 342 in April, 224 in May. His ISO's down by 100 points. And it's really funny how you're going to have different drafts and different results based on people's perception, literally based upon what point in the season you're drafting at. And so it just so happens at this point in the season, I guess, where do you lie with somebody like Paul DeJong? Do you feel like he was a good value there where you took him? Like, what do you expect with him the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think he's going to be good. I think he's made some significant changes. Like, the strikeouts are way down this year. He's got crazy power. You know, we saw that last year And it's persisted this year. I think he's going to hit a lot of home runs. He hits third, plays in a great lineup in St. Louis. It's obviously warming up there. It's going to be a good offensive summer for the Cardinals. Matt Carpenter, I think, is going to turn it around. I also grabbed Yadier Molina in this draft. So I've got Ozuna, Molina, and Paul DeJong. So I do have a lot of faith in the Cardinals to pick it up. I think Young will be really good. So I thought he was a pretty good value in the eighth. And then Judge in the seventh, picking 82. It doesn't seem like he's that far away. Like he's throwing in the outfield now. They're saying he's going to have a rehab assignment here in a week or two. And, I mean, that's just too far for Aaron Judge to fall, I thought.
Yep, totally agree. Really like that pick there. So we kind of want to talk a little bit about, some different things. But before we do, just real quick, I wanted to touch on your battle. First of all, why the hell are we ever in leagues together? I know sometimes we want to fill these and it's a Sunday night and where it's March and it's draft season and we want to draft. But like, dude, we're just taking money from each other. This is ridiculous. We have two teams that are both in the top 150 overall out of what, like 2,400 teams in the same league. And you and I just keep basically exchanging points. So right now, 2 days ago, you were like 2 points ahead of me. Right now, I'm like 2 points ahead of you. I've got 35 hitting points, and you've got 48. And then pitching on the flip side, I've got 53 pitching points. You've got 38. So I guess let's talk a little bit about our battle here.
Yeah, that's a good one. We've been kind of exchanging first and second. It seems like it rotates almost every day. Who's in first between the two of us? And as you mentioned, up in the top, 5% of teams, something like that, in the overall. So obviously having a super good season. My team has kind of shaken out in a weird way where I'm essentially punting saves at this point. I have 6 total saves on the year. I do have 46 pitching wins. You're in second with 33. So I've got a 13-point lead in pitching wins. I'm winning Ks, obviously, because I just have a team that's all starting pitchers. I did have Jose Leclerc, who I thought was going to get that Texas job back. I know you and I have both been kind of waiting for that. And then yesterday he gave up another home run and was pulled from the game with calf cramping. So crazy. I don't know what to do with Jose Leclerc, but – yeah, really fun battle here. My offense obviously is kind of carrying the load, and your pitching is doing the damage. So it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top. I'm with you where, next year we got to make sure not to jump in these leagues together, because it's hard to win the overall when we're kind of battling over the same guys on the waiver wire. It's going to kind of – I think what you kind of want to win the overall in the online championship – is to kind of run away with the league title early. Mm-hmm. And then you get like all of August and September to yourself, right? When the rest of your league has kind of quit and you can pick up all the good players.
Yeah, exactly. And then also you start sort of shifting your approach to the category standings that you're looking at. You're looking at them at from an overall perspective, because you're trying to get into that, I think, top 15 or so, maybe top 13, actually get overall prize money. And then of course that big prize at the top is a 6-digit figure. But I mean, looking at your team, it's definitely built to do some damage. I mean, your favorite pitcher, Marquez, or one of your favorites, is actually your number two behind Jacob DeGrom. You have, DeGrom, obviously, he's had a couple of rough outings this season, but so far I'm sure he'll be quite all right on the year. And then some amazing fab pickups over the course of the season. Frankie Montas, Lucas Giolito, Domingo Herman, like some really good guys that you've, added to sort of build up the staff. So looking really good.
Yeah, got a pretty insane pitching staff. We just need to find some saves at some point. What's your approach like for the overall? Like, obviously, everyone that's listening to this has probably played some, some roto baseball leagues or whatever. And I think in terms of like a league perspective, like I don't really need any more. I can't gain any more points from pitcher wins. But when there's an overall with, 2,200 teams or however many there are, you can always kind of climb, right? You're never going to be just like totally in first in pitcher wins. I'm pretty close. But so do you worry too much about like trying to gain in individual categories for the overall as compared to the league?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always kind of starting to look at that around, June or July, at least with my competitive teams, which I guess for the most part are usually most of them. But the problem is a lot of times if you're like way up there, for example, with wins, you kind of notice you have very little margin, you know, very little to gain by additional wins, right? So if you're fifth overall out of, you know, 2,500 teams, you know, you really don't have anywhere to go, and you really have to, you know, dig in and dive on those categories that you don't have. And that's sort of the problem with the overall is you can be like amazing in all the other categories, but if you're like way down there in saves, that'll literally be the one category that'll keep you from getting there to the top. So, and the beautiful thing is there will always be saves available throughout the year. So that's the thing, it's, you know, you'll get them and you'll pick them up. Unless you happen to have somebody in your league who, you know, who might end up blocking you.
No, I know that's one of the problems, but like for now, I think you probably take a similar approach where, you know, in April and May and I think even into June, I'm just trying to put out the best roster I can every week. And I'll kind of worry about, you know, picking up closers later as they become available. Like I wouldn't be surprised if 1 week, you know, maybe you grab two of them and you find lightning in a bottle there. So I'm not too worried about chasing category points yet. Although I will say, you know, I'm just like, I'm at the very bottom of the overall standings and saves. So if I am able to find a couple closers, I could really climb in that category and gain some points there.
Yeah, and it's funny because as you get kind of towards the All-Star break and people's focus starts to shift to football, like you start to see how less interested people are in spending the time to do the weekend fab bids. So you're able to actually, you know, kind of dominate and be able to get the guys that you want. And I think that's also why it's important not to to overspend on all these rookies that are coming up, especially in this format. It's a 12-teamer where, you know, you don't have to go 200-plus for, you know, these Kevin Crones and Kevon Biggios of the world. I mean, chances are whoever your middle infielder is now, not you specifically, but like anyone, is probably just as good, if not better, than the guy you're trying to, you know, chase after with rookies. So having that money, even if it's just like $100 for the last month of the season, is so important, especially if, like, you know, not in your case where you're not going to need wins and Ks, but there will be people that do. And you can just easily, you know, grab two start pitchers every week and grab what you need. Saves obviously a lot harder to grab off the waiver wire.
Yeah, no question about it. The Fabapalooza from what, two weeks ago now, where you had Austin Riley, Willie Calhoun, Oscar Mercado, Keston Hira, Nicky Lopez, Corbin Martin, all these guys just went off the board. I think Riley averaged over $300 per average pickup in the main event, and then these other guys all went for like, what, between 100 and 150 roughly. Mm-hmm. I think, was Hira the second most expensive? I think he ended up being the second most expensive.
Yeah, it was Hira and then Calhoun. And then, you know, obviously you and I both, I guess we got kind of lucky there, but got kind of pegged it with Calhoun. We didn't go too crazy on our bids for him. I even sent out a little tweet about be careful before that fab deadline. I mean, not that I predicted injury, not that anybody can, but the problem there was, of course, you know, obviously he was a big Dodger prospect, you know, good left-handed hitter. But man, that outfield, as long as it's healthy, I mean, it's pretty scary. You've got and it's crowded, right? So you've got the return of Hunter Pence, who's smashing like he's 25 again. Shinsu Chu, you got Joey Gallo, Nomar Mazara, all these lefty bats in there. And I understand there's a DH position too, but I mean, you already started to see it, and you're seeing with a lot of these guys, like, you know, in the beginning, Calhoun, you know, played a couple games, then he sat out. You've got Brendan Rodgers, who, you know, is playing like, you know, one out of every three games, it seems, two out of every three. And then even Kevin Crone, I mean, yesterday, first game back in Coors. I mean, they just promoted the guy, and he's sitting like, you know, two or four games. Like, you know, these guys are not getting the consistent playing time that you want out of somebody you're spending 200 plus for.
Yeah, that was kind of my issue with all of them. Like, I could poke holes in all of their games, you know, in terms of either their talent level and what they could do on the field or their playing time issues. And a bunch of these guys, I just didn't see, you know, where they were going to play. Like, Willie Calhoun, I mean, the Rangers have, like, eight lefties to play. Joey Gallo's not going anywhere. Calhoun has, you know, he's not going to, I don't think, take Chu's spot. Chu's playing pretty well this year. You've got even in the infield, you've got Guzman and Odor that both swing from the left side. So there just wasn't a lot of room for Willie Calhoun. Now, he got hurt, so we don't really know the answer to that question. But that was my concern with him, even though I do think he's going to be a good hitter. Austin Riley, He's been awesome so far, but Ender Inciarte on his way back, a Gold Glove center fielder. Then they've got Acuna and Markakis who play every day, and then you've got Donaldson at third base. So maybe Riley hits well enough to just kind of, you know, force those guys to take more rest and keep Riley in the lineup. But even him, I was just a little bit worried about the playing time. And, you know, my approach with these guys, I might have gone harder after them, but, like, I didn't really see – they wouldn't even necessarily become, like, instant starters for any of my teams. And I was – you know, I've been blessed with pretty good health so far, so I didn't really have any holes to fill for these guys on my roster. So mostly sat out these last couple of weeks in terms of the big pickups.
Yeah, and obviously Austin Riley has been crushing, but there's another side of the coin to everything. I mean, this is a guy that obviously was hitting a lot of home runs in the minor leagues. You know, like a, I guess, a, not like a top, you know, full-fledged prospect, but definitely somebody that was on many people's radars, but also somebody that we've discussed has, you know, a bit of a hole in his swing, and it's first his first time through the league right now. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if at some point he just goes on a, you know, on a basically an 0-for streak, just like he has been hitting home runs. And all of a sudden people are like, oh, what did I spend my money for? Really the path for him though is at some point Josh Donaldson's got to get hurt, right? It just seems like almost inevitable.
Yeah, no, I think so. And Riley, as good as he's been, he does have a 35% strikeout rate, a 26% swinging strike rate so far. Wow. In his, I don't know, what has he been up for, 40 or 50 plate appearances? So, yeah, like if that continues, he's going to strike out like 40% of the time. And even for someone with his power, that doesn't fly. And, you know, I saw him make a horrible play in left field. Like, he's more of an actual third baseman. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of a it's a make or break time for Austin Riley, and maybe he'll be a star and hit 30 home runs. But I wouldn't be shocked if he only got a couple more and got sent back down. I think that's totally within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and I think in general, I mean, just people need to keep in mind like what a long season it is, what a grind is. We're seeing people, you know, all guys hitting the injured list like every day almost. It's really crazy, and the one thing that we can't afford to do. You know, unless if you're in a daily league, it's a whole different situation. But if you're in Roto and you can only set your lineup once a week or twice a week in NFBC, you cannot allow yourself to take zeros, because especially if you want to compete for the overall, it really does make a difference, you know, at the end of the year by a couple RBIs, a couple of runs. I mean, the main event 7 years ago was won on a Jermaine Dye RBI. That was the difference between like 80 grand. So, it's absolutely crazy. So not only do we need to consider that people are hitting IL all the time, we need to have FAB available for the end of the year. There are other rookies coming up, like Jordan Alvarez, who I know you picked up in your second chance draft, Casey Mize. People are going to go nuts after the Detroit pitcher prospect. And also the fact that people are making stupid drops all the time. And you can take advantage of that too. Like, for example, Malik Smith was dropped in a league of mine, a 12-teamer that I already had D. Gordon. I was good in steals, but I had to get this guy. I just had to get him on my roster. It all this coming together with him, like going to AAA, and it just didn't make sense to me. There was only a matter of time. I understand, hey, I'm not taking a victory lap after a four steal game cycle, but still, it's Malik Smith. He'll get to the top of the lineup at some point, and even if he doesn't, he'll still steal a bunch of bases from the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah, you know, those are the pickups that you got to make. One that really bit me in the main event so far, I spent a third of my FAB on Christian Walker, who for some reason got dropped, I think, a week or two into the season. I picked him up, and he's basically done nothing for this month and a half that I've had him. And it's been frustrating because the numbers still look awesome for him. He's still barreling up the ball. He's just it's like when I'm following him on, you know, the MLB app, it's like, flies out sharply to center, lines out sharply to third baseman. It's like, and, you know, I mean, he can crush the ball, no doubt about it, and he's kept the strikeouts to a reasonable level, but he just hasn't produced at all. And, you know, I spent a third of my FAB there. So that's been frustrating, but still a kind of one of those high upside pickups that you kind of have to make. And, you know, for me, there's like two types of FAB spends. One is you're trying to improve your roster for the long term. And, you know, some of these rookies maybe that come up kind of fall into that category. And I think one that really does go overlooked, definitely not by you, of a veteran fantasy player that you are, is picking up the short-term guys, right? The guys that can help you this week whether it be in a good matchup to start week, whatever it may be. Like, I see way too many teams just kind of, oh, like, I didn't get anyone injured. I'm just going to not pick up anyone this week. Like, there's always guys that you can kind of churn and burn and try to increase your chances of you know, putting up better stats just in the upcoming week, and you move on and go from there.
Yeah, it's real simple. And obviously, I think a lot of sharp folks did that this week. I mean, you're looking at the schedule. You see that the Rockies are playing 7 at home. Who are they playing? Oh, they got a 4-game series with Colorado. With Arizona. You know, let's dig in a little deeper. How many of those are, you know, righties starting this week? How many are lefties? Who hits lefties well? Who hits righties well? Who's available in Fab? And it just kind of goes like that. And this is where you can kind of set your priority. Like, you know, for example, Jared Dyson was available in a 12-teamer. And to me, he was a priority over Kevin Krohn and Kevon Biggio, who were the, you know, obviously the exciting pickups of the week, just because it made sense. Like, he has an immediate impact for my team now. That team needed steals. He's going to Coors. He's hitting well. So things like that make a lot of sense. And then just real quick on your Christian Walker, I mean, that also is a situation where, I mean, so he had an amazing April. We saw what he's capable of. He could easily slow, you know, he slowed down in May, could easily bounce back. Like you said, he's hitting the ball well. He's still top 10 in exit velocity. He's up there in barrels. Are we really worried about like a Jake Lamb coming back and stealing playing time from him?
I'm worried about Krohn taking him out for his base spot.
That's true. It's possible.
Yeah. Especially on like the main event where, you know, there's not a ton on the waiver wire typically. It's tough. Like, you're struggling players. There's oftentimes not really anything you can kind of do about it. Like, if they're playing every day, and the underlying metrics look good, you kind of just have to keep running them out there. I'm kind of stuck with, like, a Nico Goodrum is one of those guys for me where, you know, he literally hits leadoff or cleanup every single day. I know the Tigers lineup isn't anything. Looks like he's hitting the ball well and just not producing whatsoever. But it's like, you want to move on from him, but for who, right? Like, who, if there's no one better to pick up, no one better to play, sometimes you just have to continue to roll out those guys, as frustrating as they can be.
Yeah, for sure. So that kind of segues well into a little discussion on, I guess, what it is that you and I use when we're evaluating, you know, overperformers, underperformers. I know I had a tweet last week you are sometimes the Twitter ombudsman, and you called me out, and I'm like, you know, hey, these are the guys that I think are, you know, we got to buy low on. These are the guys you're going to sell high on. And if you really look at it face value and you just kind of glance at the list, yeah, it looks like a list of, I literally took the guys that have, you know, stunk and haven't performed ADP in the first 2 months and vice versa with the other guys. And I understand sometimes it's not really that simple, but there are just like always cases like, like a Andrew Benintendi for me, for example, may not be hitting the ball very hard. Has had a lot of over fours, has really struggled, it seems, but like this offense has kind of struggled as a whole. And I think in general, I'm still just not worried about a guy like Andrew Benintendi because he's still in a key lineup spot in this, you know, amazing lineup. We haven't even gotten to the summer. Okay, granted, is he a second round pick? Probably not. But does he still have fantasy value for where he was going in second chance leagues? Probably.
Yeah, for sure. And you just kind of got to be patient with some of these guys, you know, Bryce Harper's and Machado's. They'll come around. You know, they have such a long track record of being awesome that it's just not productive to spend your energy and worry about their production to a certain extent. Like, maybe they won't turn in the first or second or third round value that you drafted them at, but and they turn in fourth or fifth round value, but it just is what it is. Everybody has bust picks, and nobody has a perfect team.
Well, I was going to say, like, how much energy or worry do you actually spend on, you know, some of these high picks, like a Jose Ramirez, you know, just playing poorly?
I try not to spend too much. It's hard, right? It's frustrating. I mean, I don't know how closely you track your teams like during the week, but it's, you know, I'm like, I know what happens basically every day in baseball around, like, who did well, who's underperforming, who's overperforming. So I try not to worry about them, but obviously you and I both play a lot of DFS too. So, you know, we spend a lot of time tracking players for those purposes. So you're kind of aware of who's doing what and who you might think, you know, might be in for a breakout. And I do think the synergy between season long and DFS can certainly be helpful at times.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, if you're playing in like NFBC, I mean, you can't trade in that league anyways. There's literally no reason at all to like put any energy into worrying. There's literally nothing you can do. You just hope for the best. It's tough when you're actually in a position where you may consider benching one of your top guys, but I usually wouldn't do it. I just kind of ride it out, hope for the best. Otherwise, in trade leagues, I mean, you just pretty much, you wait for somebody that you may have on your team who you may not think is doing well. Like if you have Jose Ramirez and you don't believe in him this year, maybe wait for that hot streak. You know, it's going to come at some point. It's almost inevitable. If he's not hurt, if he's not going to get hurt at some point, he's going to go blasting off. And if you think that that's a good time to see what you can get for him, it could be worth, could be worth checking out and seeing what you can get.
For sure. I actually don't play in any trade leagues at all. What about you? Do you have any leagues?
Not anymore. No, I just don't have the time for it. I'd rather stab.
I think I would spend way too much time like trying to make trades if I was allowed to do so. So it's probably a good thing for me, for my personal life, that I am not in any trade leagues at all.
So some of these like current early round busts, I mean, we already kind of mentioned Benintendi. We discussed Betts. And then also Bryce Harper with his new team, just still, same thing that we saw beginning of last year, just struggling to hit for average, even though he's always getting on base and walking, but just isn't really hitting for that power that we're expecting him out of him. And then Manny Machado just seems like the guy just kind of like, I feel like he's so talented, so much potential, like a Yasiel Puig where, he can really turn it on and can go nutty. And he always seems to get his numbers at the end. He's always hitting 35 homers or 100 RBIs. But I never see how he gets there. You know what I mean? Like, who do you like best of these guys?
Yeah, like Manny Machado, I think I mentioned this on our show the other day. Like, I don't think I've rostered him in DFS this entire year. I don't have a single share across, 35 season-long teams of Manny Machado. Like, his numbers over the course of his career have been so much better in Baltimore, which, I'm not obsessed with home road splits. I think they can be very noisy at times, but Baltimore is one of the best hitting parks in baseball. And so when you see a player like him that's been so much better at home than he has on the road, I was going to San Diego. He's got the big fat contract. I was kind of off Machado. I have a couple shares of Harper, but not a ton. I don't know. I just didn't like where he was going. I wasn't really worried about him. And I have a lot more faith in Harper to bounce back than Machado. I could see Machado ended up being like a pretty decent bust, wouldn't shock me at all.
And San Diego's it's a good living, right? It's a good lifestyle down there. Manny, he's waiting for those games to get over and hit the Gaslight District and go out and do his thing.
He can, he can kind of go through the motions if he wants, right? Like there's nothing stopping him from doing that at this point. And I don't know. I've never been a huge fan of Machado. So I kind of hope he continues to struggle, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't have any shares, so I do agree. back to our conversation about how we're evaluating over and under performers. I mean, obviously guys like Yelich, Bellinger, I mean, these aren't really big surprises. They're two guys that have, we've always loved, have always been on our radars, guys with monster power. But we've got a new basically group of guys who have really popped up on the scene. I know two of them actually play for San Diego and are out powering and out hitting Manny Machado. That's Franmil Reyes and Hunter Renfro. So I guess let's talk a little bit about them. Daniel Vogelbach, man, the dude's a power beast, just absolutely crushing it. And then let's also throw your boy Josh Bell in the conversation. Like what we think, what are we looking at these guys, underlying metrics wise that makes us believe or not believe that that they can do this for the rest of the year?
Yeah. So I think one thing that I, maybe misjudge or a mistake that I've made these last couple of years in season-long leagues is something that I'm hoping to kind of correct going forward is I need to value just kind of like raw power more, right? So I'm really into the play discipline is super important to me. And then like, you look at things like hard hit percentages, line drive rates, and those things are great, but like a hard hit ball is not the same for everybody, right? It gets recorded as a hard hit percentage ball, the same for everybody, if it's 95 mile per hour plus or whatever the metric they use. But like when Josh Bell or Franmil Reyes or Hunter Renfro or Dan Vogelbach hit a hard hit ball, it's got a lot more chance to do damage than like a guy like Miguel Cabrera, right? Who mm-hmm. you look at his hard hit percentage these last couple of years and you're like, oh, he's barreling out pretty well. But those barrels don't have enough. Like, there's not enough raw power there anymore to get those balls over the wall. So I think, you know, if you get the guys that can just smash baseballs, they can figure out other stuff, right? Maybe mm-hmm. they can learn to recognize breaking balls better and not swing at those, not chase so much, whatever it is. But, like, you can't teach the power, right? Like, if you kind of either have that or you don't. So I think we're kind of seeing that from a lot of these guys, Bell, Franmil, Renfro, Vogelbach. They've increased the plate discipline, and then that's allowing the kind of raw power tool to shine for these guys.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, like, it's funny. Like, for so many years, my one category that always seemed to feel weak is whip, and it's something that I've concentrated on. And it's still something that's very hard to avoid. I mean, when your guys get blasted, it can happen to anyone. But this year, for whatever reason, power ended up being an issue, common theme on all my teams. And that's because I had a lot of Giancarlo Stanton and Matt Olson shares. So obviously those two guys aren't playing. This is, you know, two key sources of my power.
Giancarlo, is he even going to play this year? Like,
I don't know, man.
My main event team, it really sucks.
I need him back like ASAP. So in the meanwhile, I've got guys like CJ Cron and Daniel Vogelbach, you know, carrying me, which is great. But, you know, I still really need these guys back if I want to make a push elsewhere. Otherwise, my team is pretty much just a bunch of like Brantley types where I've got good, you know, steals and average and runs. But I really, really need that power. But I mean, yeah, what these guys have been doing has been absolutely impressive. I did want to ask you, do you ever look at the StatCast metric of swing speed? Because I'm noticing, you know, possibly a place to, you know, find guys that might be a little bit undervalued. I know Cody Bellinger has the top rated, swing speed percentage in the league. Have you ever looked at that stat? How do you feel about it?
I actually have not. And I consider myself pretty into, you know, the advanced stats, but I have not looked at swing speed. Do you find that on Baseball Savant, I assume?
Yeah, it's on Baseball Savant. Of Baseball Savant, it's like the top next to Launch Angle.
Okay. I'll have to check that out because I assume that a lot of the top guys, the top power guys have a high swing speed. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you've got Pablo Sandoval on that list too. He's like number two.
Okay. Yeah. Cause, you know, usually when you're like, you're looking at a new metric, like you kind of know who the best players are and you're trying to find players who might be undervalued. And, you know, if the metric has all the top players kind of at the top, then the guys that are around them that are not considered top players are maybe guys that could break out in the future.
Well, so one of the things I did want to ask you was, so I've been kind of not believing what I've been seeing out of Josh Bell. And then when I start digging into some of his metrics and what he's been doing, I mean, we remember Max Muncy where people at some point like just weren't believing that Max Muncy was going to continue to do what he was doing. He was always top five among barrels, hard hit rate, exit velocity, everything last year. And he continued to stay up near the top with Gallo, Judge, and all those guys. Bell is right up there, man. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. I think just, you know, 95 mile per hour hits alone, he's second in all of baseball behind Rafael Devers, which is also another kind of interesting surprise. So, I mean, so what are we seeing in Josh Bell real? I mean, where were you targeting him in that second chance draft?
I think he went like 30th. I had the 34th pick in the third round, and I was going to take him there if he fell. I was going to take him. I think I ended up with Hoskins there, but I would have taken Josh Bell over Hoskins, over Rizzo. Basically been on him. I don't actually have any shares in season long, unfortunately, but I've been on him in DFS since like week two. I saw him hit like a 470-foot home run, like over the center field scoreboard. I forget what park it was. And just crazy power from him, from a guy that, what, he hit like 12 home runs total last year in a mostly healthy season. So he just made some changes and he's just smashing the baseball. Play discipline is good. There's just nothing there to make you think that this is fluky whatsoever, right? Like the only thing is that he hasn't done it before, but any metric you look into for Josh Bell, you're going to come away with him, you know, right at the top. And it's the difficulty is trying to figure out, you know, the chicken or the egg thing. Is he at the top of all these advanced metrics, you know, because things are going so well for him, or, you know, has he made some real changes that it's going to continue? So with Josh Bell, I'm a believer. I think it's real. And I think he's going to continue having a huge season.
So real quick, I'm just going to put myself on blast because I must do it. I completely misunderstood what the SWSP percentage is, and it's not that. It's actually the sweet spot.
Yeah, I see that.
So I just have never noticed that stat on StatCast before. So, yeah, just had to point that out there.
Yeah, still is. I mean, sweet spot, I think, is a good one to use, too. It's kind of one of those where, you know, if you can combine sweet spot percentage with Rob Power, those are the guys that obviously are going to hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah, totally makes sense. What about some of the current underperformers that we see? I mean, you know, David Dahl, for example. I mean, not someone we're expecting to hit 30 plus home runs, but you know, he's only got a couple in the year. He spent a little bit of time on the IL, but he's in Coors. Things are about to warm up there. I think he's only got like 4 home runs. Actually had a list of guys that I at least wanted to look at and see what you thought about, but he's one of them. Another is Miggy, who I think we're maybe both on the same page that the power may be done. And then 3 other guys, his teammate, Christian Stewart, lefty bat with some power for the Tigers. G-Man Choi, who obviously has some power as well and just only has a couple home runs this year. And then Nick Castellanos, another Tiger. Like, am I just completely, you know, off my rocker here thinking some of these Tiger bats start hitting homers?
Well, you can throw my guy Nico Goodrum into that pile of guys that have that look like they have better underlying metrics than they've performed so far. I don't know if they fixed it. There used to be a thing in Tiger Stadium. I think there was evidence for it where basically the stat cast was off, and so all these Tigers had higher hit percentages than they deserved. So maybe that's still going on because I agree with you. You know, Miggy, Christian Stewart, Castellanos, Goodrum, they all kind of seem like they should be better than they are, and it seems almost like too much of a coincidence that there's so many from the same team. So, yeah, Miggy, I'm just completely off. I just don't think he has the bat speed anymore to get the ball over the wall. Like, you'll see him, you'll watch him, and he'll take what looks like a pretty good, like, home run type swing, barrel it up, and, you know, it'll get caught 10 feet short of the center field wall. So that certainly can be frustrating. I think Castellanos would be the guy that I would have the most faith in to turn it around. Just a really good hitter, and I think the power is legitimate for him. David Dahl, man, I just don't really mess with the Rockies outside of Arenado and Story. They just have so many guys, and they just rotate them in all the time. I don't know. I think I'm maybe overly biased in going for the players that have everyday playing time. The platoon bats, yeah. I don't know. They just grind my gears for some reason.
Yeah, totally makes sense. You know what's interesting on Nick Castellanos is, so he was actually one of the best left-hand pitcher crushers last season, just like absolutely mashing them. I mean, you know this well because we would play him a lot in DFS, and he would come through for us. And then this year, you're seeing he's only got a couple home runs, just 5 on the year, and you know he's probably going to get to his 23, 27 or so homers. And I'm wondering, like, is he just not hitting lefties well? And then I realize he's not even really facing lefties. For whatever reason, so far this season, the Tigers, he's got basically about 210 at-bats, and only 35 of them have come against lefties. So a lot of that has to do with the division. But, you know, I guess at some point not balance out, but at least a little bit, right? He'll start to see some more lefties and hopefully start to crush them.
Yeah. There's like no lefties in the Central Division. The Twins, yeah, I think, have 1. The Indians have that, you know, just right-handed dominant rotation. The Royals, I think they have just Danny Duffy from the left side. I actually read an article that just left-handed pitching in general is like declined like 5 or 6 straight years in MLB, which is a kind of a weird thing. I don't really know the reason behind it, but we're still early enough in the season where there are kind of statistical anomalies like that.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of trying to look ahead and see how many teams they face in their division. I mean, pretty much in the month of June, the Tigers are going to, you know, they're going to see their own division a lot. They're going to see, you know, some tough pitching with the Indians. They're going to see the Royals, the Indians again, the Twins. Mix it up with some Rangers, some Nationals, and some Rays. So probably see a bunch of lefties coming up against the Rays next week.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, any other players or anyone else that we can look at that might be able to get going in the next couple of weeks here, power wise?
I mean, what do you think of Vladimir Guerrero? We'll figure it out here. I know he's got some home runs now, but he's still been somewhat disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's big pedigree for a reason. I think at the end of the season, he's going to be one of those guys that he's not going to hit that projection. Like if you remember the Steamer projections for preseason, Vladimir Guerrero, before even playing a single major league game, was projected for the highest batting average in the league, even ahead of Jose Altuve, which is pretty wild. This year, the plate discipline's good. You know, I mean, he's walking 10% of the time, striking out less than 20%. So it's just kind of this, you know, he has a key lineup spot in the order. The lineup or this offense just hasn't hit really well. But, you know, five homers through his first 100 or so at bats, I think that's a nice pace, about, 20 home run every 20 plate appearances. So I think he'll probably get to his 25 home runs, and I think he'll start to get that average up. I think at some point this summer, he's going to get really, really warm, and that 235 will be probably somewhere closer to a 280.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do think it was ridiculous to have him projected as the highest average hitter in baseball over the Altuves and the Trouts that have done it year after year after year already.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Other than that, I mean, the one thing is Justin Smoke. I highlighted him in my From the Gut article last week because something was just off. I mean, he was same thing. Like, you were talking about, who was it you were talking about who was crushing the ball but not going out of the park?
Christian Walker.
Yeah. So this is what had been happening to Justin Smoke, like hard hit rate of like 70%, like crazy fly ball, like everything, but only five homers on the season. Follows up with six home runs basically in the last five games. So identifying that type of stuff makes so much sense. And same thing, it's, we talk about it every time we're on the show, but looking ahead for your free agent bidding to see who the opposing teams are they're facing, and also projecting like who those pitchers are. Obviously, rainouts can throw some things off here and there, but like you're seeing Justin Smoke coming up, Toronto going up against a bunch of righties, fly ball righties who stink. It obviously kind of makes him more of a priority for your bidding.
Yeah, for sure. Smoke, I've got him a bunch of shares of Justin Smoke, and I was happy to see him break out. And yeah, it was one that you could see coming. You certainly highlighted that and nailed it. And, that's kind of what we're trying to do in DFS and in season long, is try to, nail the next big thing. And it doesn't always have to be a prospect. It can be a veteran that's swinging it well and just kind of getting unlucky in the short term.
So we are through 2 months of the season. We're about 6 weeks away from the All-Star game. And yeah, we're getting there. I mean, any last minute thoughts before we send everyone off? We'll probably be back with you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll do it again in a couple of weeks for sure before the All-Star break, and kind of evaluate where we are at during that time.
All right, everybody. So enjoy the beginning of June. Keep crushing it. For DC, this is Vlad, Fantasy Baseball Elite. Yeah.